Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So, Greg, AJ Styles did not have a chance to sign the contract for one of the main events at Fastlane, teaming with John Cena against Jimmy Uso and Solo Sikoa. He was beat up backstage, off camera, splashed by Solo Sikoa from 15 feet in the air, taken out in a stretcher. Cole saying Cena has no partner. Is Cena going to face them 2-on-1, or is there someone else out there who maybe could team with Cena if Styles isn't ready to take on Solo and Jimmy Uso? What do you think, Greg?
I think the answer to your question, is there someone out there that can team with John Cena, is yeah. I think he'll find someone. It was a very heavy heat angle to end the show, not only the attack on AJ Styles, but the attack on John Cena. We've seen wrestlers come back from attacks like that, like the one that AJ Styles suffered tonight, come back very quickly, you know. And the pay-per-view is, I think, still 2 weeks away. So it does give off the possibility that AJ Styles could make it back in time. But I also think this could be an opening for someone like LA Knight, who we saw have at the last Premium Live event, he shook John Cena's hand. You know, it was a grudging respect, I think, given by perhaps both men. And so that may have been the seed that was planted for LA Knight either accepting an invitation by John Cena or putting himself in that position to team with John Cena against Jimmy Uso and Solo Sikoa at Fastlane.
Now, what about – by the way, I'm intrigued by that. It makes sense. He's been missing since the match with Miz, and it'd be a perfect way to get him in the mix and satisfy fans who want to see him in a top spot. What about Jey Uso? Mm-hmm. What would that work? Would Jey answering the opening, trying to fill the opening and take on Jimmy, teaming with Cena, make sense? Or do you think they should save Jey versus Jimmy for something else, and LA Knight is a better option?
I think Knight is a better option at this point. I think once you've made the decision to move Jey Uso to Raw and have him quit SmackDown and move him away from the Bloodline, I think you have to take a lot longer to establish him on Raw and establish him as a separate entity from the Bloodline before you can have him come back and really challenge the crowd. And I think, you know, he hasn't done that yet. He's still trying to win over the Raw locker room in a lot of respects. And I think that's a very intriguing storyline as it plays out week to week on Monday Night Raw. And I'm enjoying seeing that playing out. And I think it would feel like you're skipping a lot of steps in the story to have him come back so soon to help John Cena.
What are you thinking about John Cena this time around? When you hear John Cena's going to be back, and you're like, oh, you know, he's just going to do the things he did early on, you know, goof off, be a backstage correspondent, a host, a special ref, have maybe a special match. He's back to wrestle in India and check that box. But he feels like completely immersed to me right now in what's going on. He had Carl Anderson saying, you know, I warned Styles to stay away from telling Cena. I told Styles stay away from the Bloodline. You have Cole saying Cena just found out what it's like when you get mixed up with the Bloodline. When they first announced Cena, I was like, where is he going to fit in? What is he going to do? What's a good one-on-one opponent for him? And they're setting this up nicely as a tag match where, you know, SmackDown ends with Cena on his back in the ring and Solo and Jimmy standing over him. Cena just feels like he's like a full-time wrestler again, as opposed to, you know, a guy sort of dipping his toe in the water and acting like I haven't seen him this invested in something in a while. That just felt like it was in the flow, I guess, is what I'm getting at. How about you?
Well, when he got involved at the beginning of the show and they were trying to set up that tag match, you almost thought to yourself, geez, can Cena meet the moment? Can he meet the expectations that come with being involved in the Bloodline storyline? Just simply because, as you said, you know, he's kind of come in and done some stuff with Austin Theory and done some stuff with Grayson Waller, and it's been very light, and it's not been anything that really would allow him to immerse himself into a very serious storyline the way that the Bloodline calls for. So I think that was kind of part of the heat segment tonight too, was establishing John Cena is now here in a more serious way. You know, the beatdown of AJ Styles, the beatdown of John Cena, now he has something to work with. Now he has a gripe. He has a reason to be heated, a reason to be intense, a reason to bring out the John Cena that we know he still has in him, even though we haven't necessarily seen it the last couple times he's been in WWE. So I'm really interested to see, not so much tonight, but in the follow-up to this, you know, will Cena be able to meet that moment? Because the other thing, too, is I've been feeling like Cena, more so than any other time that he's been in WWE, whether full-time or even brought back for special occasions, dropping him into this era of WWE feels different. I mean, he feels more like an outsider to me when he's being dropped into WWE now than he ever has been. And, you know, time does that. You know, time away does that. The further you are away from a full-time career, the more it's going to feel like that when you come back. But just things have changed around him. WWE storylines are a little more immersive, those main event storylines. They're a little more serious. You know, the Judgment Day, the Bloodline, Jey Uso, the Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens relationship. Those storylines are a little more intricate than when John Cena had his heyday. And it was like, you know, John Cena is forced to join the Nexus, and there just wasn't – it didn't go nearly as deeply as we as fans wanted it to go. It was very surface-level stuff. And so it has felt like Cena is almost an alien being dropped on a foreign planet these days. So, you hope that he's able to meet the moment. I don't have any doubt that he will, but it would be a side of Cena that we haven't seen in a lot of his recent appearances in WWE.
It's still weird to me that he is so embraced, so cheered by the WWE fans. Like, I mean, it's just a sidebar observation, but I'm watching him just get 100% positive reaction. And like Kurt Angle, people loved him, but they still chanted, you know, that he sucks on his way to the ring. And it was sort of this, you know, affectionate, ironic chant. And it's like fans won't even do that. Like they're not chanting, let's go Cena sucks, even for fun. It's just, we love this guy. We grew up with this guy. And now we've seen him branch out and be in cool TV series and movies. And now we just are amazed that he's taking time out to be here in front of us. And yeah, it's just, it's a fun chapter for him. Cause I have not, and I don't love everything. I found him really obnoxious when he first came back this month. But it is cool that he right now, as of tonight, it feels like he's in a fresh set of circumstances. He's left, come back, but he's an outsider in a way, but he's also immersed in what's going on in a way that I haven't felt in a while. So, yeah. You know, he's turned me around a little bit the last couple of weeks, and I think, you know, they've got themselves a main event for Fastlane that I think people are going to be interested in, and I think it's a good use of Cena.
And I also think that this is kind of what the Bloodline needs right now. Roman Reigns, while he's been away, I feel like things have been running in place a little bit with Jimmy Uso and Paul Heyman and Solo Sikoa. You just can't replace the star power of Roman Reigns. When he is there, the world revolves around him, the Bloodline storyline. As much as Jimmy and Solo and Paul Heyman and Jey Uso play important parts in that storyline, I mean, Roman Reigns is the tribal chief. He's the tribal chief of the storyline, too. So when he's not there, it does kind of feel like you're sort of waiting for that next Roman Reigns appearance for the next big step in the storyline. And so I think John Cena being involved, you know, we've seen wrestlers come in and out of this Bloodline storyline, whether it's Sami Zayn, Daniel Bryan, Kevin Owens throughout the last 3 years, but we've never seen somebody the level of John Cena get now ensnared in the tentacles of the Bloodline storyline. And it's just going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And what, if any, interactions he has with Roman Reigns over the next few months, depending upon how long this involvement of Cena in the story lasts.
All right, I want to talk more about the Bloodline and get your take on Jimmy Uso's demeanor and how Solo and Heyman are reacting to him and how this eventually will play out with Roman, and we'll speculate on that. But first, let's pause. Let's formally introduce the show, give out the phone number and email, and move to our callers too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, September 22nd, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Post Shows, along with the Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Podcast. Earlier this week, Rich Fan was my co-host on the flagship, so hope you guys check that out if you haven't yet. And also I've hosted the Raw, Dynamite, and now the SmackDown Post Shows, and tomorrow night I'll be hosting the Collision Post Show here on the Red Logo Show. The other voice you hear so far tonight is Greg Parks, a longtime Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist, host of the PW Torch Daily Cast, Wrestling Night in America, usually a Sunday night show focusing on wrestling's big events, and also that shifts into a later time slot and sometimes a Saturday night time slot covering doing a post-show live with callers after major events, and that'll be the case with Fastlane coming up just 2 weeks from now. Greg, welcome back to the co-host chair here on the Wade Keller Podcast.
Pleasure to be here, Wade.
Great having you. You also are the voice behind the VIP exclusive Greg Parks Out Loud podcast, the new series where you read your Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter column to our VIP members who can't read or who don't read or who just like to hear your voice. And you add
I like to think it's the latter. I like to think
yes. Yep. But no, it's great. It's a second way of taking all the time and effort that you put into your column and reaching a whole new audience, whose ever idea that was. It was great. and you had some fun notes and details about how you came up with the idea. Like last week, you're talking about how just hosting Wrestling America sometimes is what gives you your ideas for columns, your interaction with callers. So that's a cool bit of insight too. So, yeah, well, we might talk about some of your recent columns as the show goes on here. We'll see. But I want to give out the phone number and the email because we appreciate and enjoy hearing from our listeners. The phone number, if you're live streaming our show here just after SmackDown ended, the number to call is 347-215-5558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. That's 347-215-8558. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts on SmackDown, suggested topics, or questions for us. You don't need to listen to the live stream to participate by email. If you watch SmackDown live or semi-live, you can email your thoughts and questions and then listen back to the show over the weekend. All right. So with all that business out of the way, speaking of callers, let's get rolling with our callers. We'll start with Brad in Florida, and then on deck will be Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Brad, thanks. You're up first tonight. What's on your mind about tonight's SmackDown?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Greg. So tonight's show for me fell extremely flat. Man, they could not be missing Roman Reigns anymore. I even with Cena, if they think that Cena coming in is going to replace what Roman Reigns brings to the table, and I don't think that they necessarily do, but it's just not going to happen. And I mean, this feels to me like watching, you know, 5 episodes in a row of, you know, The Sopranos with no Tony Soprano, like anywhere to be found, or watching, you know, 5 episodes of Saved by the Bell with no Zach Morris anywhere to be found. I mean, there's certain people that need to be on a show, and I understand a week or two off, and I'm not blaming Roman. I'm not one of these guys that's like, oh, he needs to be on. But to me, like, it's evident that something is majorly, majorly missing from this show. This crowd tonight really got screwed. I mean, they really got screwed in Phoenix tonight or Glendale, whatever. I mean, basically, you have Cena coming out at the beginning saying he's going to give you a match. Nothing happens, basically, in the opening segment except for a stare down and then a walk away. And then they end up not getting a Cena match and finding out it's at Fastlane. They get no LA Knight, which I'm shocked. To me, the best thing on the show tonight was actually the Pretty Deadly vignette. And to me, that was the most entertaining thing on the whole show, and I'm being dead serious when I say that. I mean,
that was fun. That was well done.
Very well done. The Asuka Io Sky match, fine, but no one knows who to root for. No one has any rooting interest. They're both, you know, bad guys basically that no one really, you know, seems to want to get behind. So I felt like this crowd tonight, and then the ultimate screw job of the crowd comes when AJ Styles gets injured and Paul Heyman comes out and goes, now John Cena has no partner. Oh, who's the partner potentially going to be? Not the guy he hugged last week backstage, right? Not that guy. So the entire crowd is chanting Rock, thinking that this is the end of the show. Something big's going to happen. Obviously, the Rock's coming out to be his, to either save him or be his tag team partner. And they don't get that either. They just get a slow, methodical beatdown with nothing. And honestly, I felt like this was a very flat episode. And I want your guys' thoughts on that. I mean, it just seems something is really missing here.
So, Greg, Brad threw a lot out there. I'll throw to you to respond to any of it, then I'll kind of follow up if you don't hit on some things that I'm kind of curious about to get your thoughts on.
I liked Asuka versus Io Sky better than he did. I think Io has been positioned more as a babyface, even though she's kind of with the heel group. But yeah, I was thinking the same thing about the live crowd in terms of not getting the match. And then, you know, they didn't even really get the contract signing, which was the main event segment. I mean, they kind of pulled the rug out from under that. Not that anybody should be really anticipating a contract signing, but it's just another, bait and switch a little bit that WWE did here tonight. Hopefully, and I don't know if we have any live correspondence lined up, but hopefully they had a stellar dark match. Hopefully Cena wrestled in the dark match, maybe. That might be the saving grace, at least for the live crowd. But, I think that the point about Roman Reigns is valid, and I think, you know, that's the good and the bad of having a star that size and having a storyline, the top storyline in the company for 3 years built around one guy, is that when that one guy is gone for an extended period, for whatever reason, things can feel flat. And that's kind of what I said earlier. Without Reigns, it does feel like the Bloodline storyline is kind of running in place. You don't really get that advancement without Roman Reigns being there. So I don't feel as strongly, but I definitely get some of the issues with this episode.
So I'll push back a little bit in the sense that Roman isn't there, but Paul Heyman, Jimmy Uso, and Solo Sikoa have been built up as big deals. Heyman is a big personality with a lot of history associated with a lot of big names. And John Cena's there. I mean, yes, Brad, if John Cena were not there, they would have needed to adjust a lot of things in order to not have the absence of Roman really stand out. But Roman is still part of the narrative. He, you know, by not having him on the show, things are happening and you've got Roman on your mind. What's Roman going to think? How is he going to react? And I think they do a good job weaving that into the storyline, telling Jimmy, well, usually we consult the tribal chief before we make decisions like this. And so they build up this tension of what will happen when he shows up. And when he does show up, it pops a rating. So I think they're doing well with that situation. One, you got Cena. And two, you're talking about Roman in a way that makes his return seem like like it'll be a big deal when it happens. So that worked for me. Greg stole my thunder in saying, I hope there's a dark match. We've got Brian from Phoenix giving us a call soon, I believe, from attending tonight. So we'll find out if they did give the fans the match that TV viewers did not get. And if it is a tag match, I am curious. Do they do a dry run with LA Knight? Or do they pull somebody else from the undercard, not even sure who that would be. Or do they just do, you know, a quickie, you know, Cena versus Jimmy match and Cena gets a win and we just aren't supposed to talk about it, but the fans are happy, that kind of thing. So we'll see. Brad, I know you brought up some of those things. Is there anything else you want me or Greg to address?
No, I mean, just LA Knight not being on the show, I thought, you know, maybe he was the dark match, I don't know, but even for the home viewing audience, you know, like, a lot of people tune into the show now to see LA Knight, you know, they really do, and
yeah.
And to just not get LA Knight, even just a quick promo, I told you I was coming for gold, blah, 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 you know, and I'm really surprised that we got absolutely nothing in that way. Even if it was just a quick, you know, entrance and a whatever. And next week they're advertising, obviously, Santos versus Rey, right? Unless I missed
yep.
something in that tag match, did we not get any miscommunication between Santos and Rey, or was there?
I don't think
or
so.
Was
Greg, was
normal...
there?
I don't remember seeing anything.
No.
Yeah, so
good
there
for
was
them,
no
right?
I guess, but you'd like to see, like, maybe, like, there's some animosity, or there might be a little, you know, something going on here, you know? Like, I was just surprised at the way they played that. Bobby Lashley, obviously, like, almost like not being a wrestler anymore is weird to me.
Yeah.
And I really believe they've taken a lot out of Charlotte's character, too. I really, you know, Charlotte was a person a year ago who could open or close any SmackDown with a rude promo or just, you know, whatever she was doing, and it was great. And now she just comes out, you know, doesn't say a word. Oh, she punched Bayley in the face. Cool, I guess. But, like, to me, they've taken a lot away. And I heard with Roman, and I could be wrong, Wade, you might have this information, I don't know, but I heard with Roman, his next appearance on SmackDown is going to be October 27th or something like that, meaning we have another 4 or 5 episodes of call Roman Reigns, call Roman Reigns.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so long that you can call Roman Reigns, you know? There's only so long that you could do that, and I get it. Paul Heyman's a big guy, but Jimmy's character is very different without Jay. Solo seems to just not be as intriguing to me, at least, as he was. When Roman was around, what's he going to do? Who's he going to side with? What's going on? What's Roman telling him? All of that stuff is really lacking from their A show. And it's, to me, lost me in a little bit tonight.
Yeah.
It really did, guys.
Yeah. Well, Greg, big picture, do you think that a lot of people feel that the way Brad does, or do you give WWE a better grade for all the things that they're doing in the absence of Roman?
I do think, you know, I've said that the absence of Roman, I think, hurts the storyline. I think they are, you know, it's not like it's now on the back burner without Roman. WWE is continuing to push it as a top storyline, but I agree that there is something missing here without Roman Reigns. Jimmy and Solo and Paul Heyman all work the best as characters when they're playing off Roman Reigns. And without Roman Reigns there to play off of, there is something missing in those characters. And that's why I kind of said, you know, that this is it does not feel like the storyline is advancing necessarily the same way it would be. Yes, Roman Reigns is still the cloud that hangs over the Bloodline storyline, but it's very different. It's just very different without him there. I mean, you just can't make up for his absence. He's just too big of a part of the storyline, and he's too big of a part of SmackDown and WWE, the way he's been built up the last 3 years. You know, his absence is going to be felt.
I want to go to his comment, Brett's comment on Rey and Escobar. I think if there was miscommunication, I think we'd be critical of it. Like, oh, what are the odds of miscommunication?
Yeah.
And it would sort of give away, like, yeah, we're gonna do an angle next week. Like, by having them just get along going into the match, I think it will be more shocking if Escobar does something, and it won't be for the stale, like, just overplayed reason of, oh, he completely misunderstood something and held a grudge, even though a replay would have showed nothing was intended by it. I like it, and I'm not even convinced that's when they pulled the trigger on the turn. I'm certainly not ruling it out. I'd probably put my money on it, but, I mean, I like that it's not just like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
Predictability isn't always bad, but if this is a master plan by Escobar, I'd rather have it be a master plan where he's been, you know, in the back of his mind thinking of turning on Rey. But to me, I think what's more likely is Rey beats Escobar next week, and it's clean, and Escobar doesn't handle it well, and that leads to several more weeks of storylines. not just, oh yeah, they're gonna fight and Escobar is gonna cheat to win and then get, and then Ray gets his rematch at Flash Lane, which again very well might happen. But I kind of like the idea of extending it a little bit more. Greg, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd be all for that. I would be all for, and this is probably has a close to 0% chance of happening, but Santos Escobar not turning on Rey Mysterio ever. Like,
yeah,
I'd be totally okay with that. Like, you need to have baby faces who have good friends. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, we just had, I say we just had, but, I mean, Dominic Mysterio turned on Rey in a very public way, and that haunted Rey for a long time. I worry about Rey kind of turning into a modern day Sting with, you know, people turning on him. And I know he's an easy guy to portray as someone to get sympathy for because he's small, but you know, I worry that the Santos turn might be one too many on Rey. But yeah, I think it's probably inevitable that that's going to happen. And I do hope it plays out as you kind of laid out, Wade, because I think that's a lot more intriguing than the usual, you know, can see it coming a mile away type thing.
And what about Charlotte? Brad brought up Charlotte, thinks that she's lost momentum. She came to ringside. You know, her job was to look like a star and seem like a legend in that women's division. She did come to Asuka's aid. I agree with Brad that I don't think there's a lot of passionate emotions rooting for or against anyone. I give WWE credit for framing this as a dream match, creating a video, having Cole frame it that way. I think they got the most out of this match that they could, given what they had to work with coming into this week. But, and now Charlotte and Bayley next week announced. What do you think of the state of Charlotte? I know she, you know, prefers to be a heel and fans, you know, are willing to boo her, but sometimes she gets that star reaction first where fans cheer her. And it always feels like it's a bit of a booking conundrum for WWE. Your thoughts on Charlotte and the Sky Asuka presentation that Brad brought up.
I'm just not super into Charlotte Flair as a character. And that goes back a while now. I think she's been cold for a while. So her appearance here, I think it gives a little more credit than I'm willing to give to, you know, her previous runs recently, to say that this kind of cooled her off a little bit. There's not a lot to get excited about. You know, the heel stuff, we've seen that. We've seen the babyface stuff. There really isn't a lot new there, unfortunately. So we'll see. I mean, this interaction with Bayley and with Io Sky, and just by virtue of sort of Io Sky playing a babyface within a sort of heelish group, and then Charlotte Flair having to play off of that dynamic, might bring out something different that will seem new and that we haven't seen out of her before. I'm not really holding my breath, but I think that's kind of the best case scenario, is that I think Charlotte and Io Sky would be interesting. And, you know, maybe the match with Bayley next week is a step toward that.
Brad, anything you want to reply to there?
Yeah, I'll just let you get to Sean, but like on Charlotte, like that's part of the thing that bothers me. Like when she comes to Asuka's aid, the last thing, the most recent memory that I have of Asuka is her spitting and cheating in Bianca's face to win the championship in a really despicable way of winning a championship, gouging her eyes with the mist or whatever it was. And I don't understand why Charlotte would come to the aid of Asuka. Like, what has Asuka done for Charlotte to help her? So that, it's just all puzzling. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense. And not in a good way, not making sense. Like, there's times where, you know, things don't make sense, but you're, like, intrigued by it. To me, it just doesn't make sense. And that is kind of where it sort of bothered me with Charlotte the most. But I'll let you get to Sean and the other guys. And thank you so much for taking the call, Greg and Wade.
Sure thing. Thanks, Fred. Yeah, I can't explain why fans should have been rooting for Asuka or why Charlotte came to Asuka's defense. But I hope they follow up on especially, you know, just have someone. Was there a backstage interview on the show? Was there someone holding a mic asking questions of anyone? It just struck me. Like, this was a different format.
Yeah, I remember.
Maybe. Because they had Pierce backstage a couple of times.
Right. I remember Lashley and the Street Profits. There was no, I don't think there was an interviewer for that. What about after the very first segment when they went backstage? Was there any, I don't think there was anything there, was there?
No. No, I don't remember the last time they didn't have an interviewer.
Wow.
So I don't know if that's it just struck me. I thought, we're talking like, wait a second, there weren't any backstage interviews. So I don't know if that's a new formatting thing or someone just wasn't available. They were out sick. They had to augment it. Who knows what? But
In my mind, before Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits had their little thing, I'll go back and say, please welcome my guest at this time, Bobby Lashley, and just to fill in that gap.
Exactly. They don't always do much, but I would like to, and it would have been nice this week, but they can do it next week. Have somebody go, Charlotte, why did you come to ringside and why did you go after Bayley and were you rooting for Asuka and, you know, whatever. I mean, just address it, because I think Brad brings up good questions. And I think WWE
My concern actually was that they wouldn't follow up with Lashley this week with the Lashley Street Profits thing. When they went backstage, I was concerned that they weren't going to follow up with that. So I'm glad they did with that tonight.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Let's go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee next. Sean, welcome to the show. What's in your mind about SmackDown?
Well, it's been a while, and I love when Wade and Greg, like, these are two of my favorites. You know, I get to be on the phone with both of you guys. It's always fun. And I will say, Brad, I love you, man. You threw a lot out there, man. That was awesome. I was like, I don't even know where to go with any of this. This is all good stuff. Like, there's so much conversation that came out of this show. First of all, how are you guys doing tonight? Good to talk to you.
Doing well, thanks.
Good. Good to hear from you, too. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. And Wade, when you were talking about my music the other day, I was like, man, I hope he played my music just for the fun of it. But no, don't do that. I was laughing when you brought it up after Dynamite. I just thought it just cracked me up and I was listening to it. I disagree with Brad on – well, I agree with him on the Charlotte Asuka stuff. That was weird. And Asuka has been undefined for a long time now, which is kind of sad because she's so good in the ring and she's so good that I wish they would define her better. But overall, I disagree. Like, the show was really good for me. I loved it. I loved a lot of it. I really enjoyed this show in so many ways, actually. Going back to Cena, I just wanted to throw out what you were talking about with Cena at the beginning. I mean, I was with you, Wade, at first. When he first came back on SmackDown, I was like, man, you're just too – you haven't been there for a while. You're just joking around. Nobody cares about your jokes, really. I mean, the fans are into it because they like you. But, I mean, I just couldn't get into it. Now this is going to be, like you were talking about, especially Greg, I'm interested to see how serious he makes this. And he kind of has to now because of how serious AJ, you know, quote-unquote, got attacked. I think this is a good spot for Cena to see kind of what he's going to do while he's here. And I really like all that. I mean, yeah, the fans didn't get, you know, whatever. But the fans, some weeks you're going to get some stuff, some weeks you're not. That's just part of going to a live show. I mean, that's just part of it. I mean – so I love what they're doing with Cena. And I wanted to ask you about Jimmy and what he did tonight, because I thought it was funny because Heyman kept saying, you know, like when Jimmy just would take the thing and want to sign the contract, and Heyman's like, you know, going back to like, well, Roman's got to really – we got to ask him about this first, you know, talk to him about this before we just start doing this. And then Jimmy just like signs the contract, and Heyman's like, well, I guess you got to sign it because he's already signed it, so I guess you have to sign it. I really liked what Heyman was doing. So – what did you think about Jimmy, the way he was acting with Heyman? Where do you think that might be going, even though it's going to be, like you said, a while that Roman's going to be back? But the interaction with Jimmy and Heyman, I don't like where Jimmy is going in some ways, but I like the interaction with him and Heyman. Where do you think they might be going with that?
Yeah, Greg, Tom Martin had some criticism of Jimmy Uso and the you know, getting beat up and hospitalized and then turning – but then costing Jay the match and trying to explain it and then wanting back in the bloodline after turning away from Rome. There's so many contradictions with Jimmy's actions. And now he just seems delighted to be hanging out with Solo and Heyman again. And in a way that's sort of, you know, getting out of the skin of Heyman and especially Solo, it's like, calm down. Your energy is not the energy that Solo wants around him.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. It's clear. I mean, it's obviously deliberate. There's just a gregarious, ebullient dynamic that he has playing off of being in the presence of Heyman and Solo that's irritating them, and I don't really know where that's leading. But you know, Jeff Rush wrote in his column on PW Torch, you know, well, you know, Jimmy isn't good being alone, and so he didn't want Jay to become Roman, but he also just can't stand being alone, and he's a follower, and he just, you know, his constitution does change as the wind blows in a different direction. What do you think of Jimmy's character leading into this week, and what did you take from his demeanor this week?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm not really sure yet what to make of the way he's acting without Roman Reigns around. It's obviously a very, you know, from a, you know, looking at this not in storyline, it's obviously a very calculated way that he's acting. Like, he's being instructed to play it to the hilt the way he is, to be as outgoing as he is. It's not a choice that Jimmy Uso is making for the character. It's you know, he's being told, play it like this so that it plays into something down the line. What that something is, we don't know. So I'm sort of interested to see what this all means. And, you know, this is not the Jimmy Uso that we've seen previously in this storyline. So it is intriguing, because anytime you see that drastic kind of character change within a storyline, it usually means something pretty significant. So, you know, going back to what you said, it probably means something. We just haven't seen all the pieces of the puzzle yet to fit it together.
Yeah, yeah. Sean, back to you. Is there anything you brought up we didn't cover, or anything you want to add to that?
No, I'm just curious to see where they go with it. I haven't, like I said with you, I haven't liked what Jimmy's been doing, but tonight was a little more interesting with the him and Heyman, you know, back and forth and kind of some of the stuff they were doing. That made it a little more, I think made it interesting to me. But I wanted to go back to the match with, you know, Io and Asuka. Just with the match itself, like, I thought the match was phenomenal. I thought it was a great match until the end. I just thought with the way the referee was standing in between the ropes, I just thought that was really weird. I'm like, why are you in the middle, like in between the ropes where she's trying to get to the rope? Like, that was weird. And then the interference, which I'm like, oh, they always feel like they have to get some kind of interference or some kind of spot in there, where it was just, almost like in my mind, I'm thinking, let these guys have an amazing match. Let one of them go over the other. It's not going to, I mean, you know, it's not going to hurt Asuka if she loses. Like, just have a clean win. Put Io over. She's the champion. Put her over strong. Even if she's I feel like she has kind of been a babyface, but I think she's a heel right now, but I think she's on the road to being a great babyface here at some point. And I'm on them with the journey. I want to see where the journey is going to go. But was the ending as bad as I thought it was? Because that's what took away from it. I thought the match was like 4.5 stars. I thought it was really, really good for a SmackDown match.
Yeah, Greg, talk about what Sean brings up there. And also just the trajectory for Asuka. Maybe her career is winding down. This might have been a moment, like meant to be a special moment for Io Sky, but the finish was not satisfying. Although Michael Cole said, despite the shenanigans, you know, a statement match or a statement win for Io, I'm not quite sure what story they're telling or where it's leading, but Io Sky seems like a natural babyface, and that seems like the destiny. I didn't see anything tonight that just made it seem like that's imminent, though.
Yeah, they have sort of put on hold a lot of the teases of Io Sky breaking away from Damage Control that they were once teasing pretty heavily. So I don't know. Maybe the whole group ends up turning babyface, but you know, the finish, I don't think the finish was necessarily done to protect Asuka or to not put Io Sky over clean. You know, based on the matchup set for next week with Bayley versus Charlotte Flair, it seemed almost to set that matchup, like a means to an end to set up Charlotte versus Bayley and start the wheels turning with Charlotte perhaps eventually getting that title match against Io. So, yeah, as far as Asuka winding down, it's hard to say. Like, you know, she's crossed a Rubicon of sorts that a lot of women don't cross in WWE in terms of being a full-time active competitor at her age. So she's definitely, you would think, closer to the end of the career than the beginning. But I didn't see any specific signs that this was going to play into that at all.
All right, Sean, back to you. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I wanted to say, Greg, the thought I have on the interference part is just have Bayley like get in Charlotte's face and then have Charlotte attack Bayley. But it doesn't have to do with the match. Like, just have mm-hmm. – I don't know why they have to have the interference with Bayley, you know, put her foot on the rope and then the referee just be the way he was. I just wish they would just have the clean match. You could do the Bayley-Charlotte part away from it. I don't think it has to interact with the match. I guess that's what
right.
was my thought on that, and I'm just like,
no,
oh, I
agree with you.
But.
You know, there are dozens of ways that you could get to Bayley versus Charlotte Flair next week without having it be a part of an interference in a long title match, and I think that's kind of the frustrating part too. Is it was such a long match, it was such a good match. The longer a match goes and the better a match gets, to me, the less accepting people are of interference in it, right? Because you're invested
right.
in this for so long, you do want to see a clean finish. And I think that's what made this interference particularly galling for a lot of people, yourself included, is, you know, you're immersed now 20-plus minutes in this match, which we don't get a lot of 20-plus women's TV matches, let alone for the title. And so you're into it, and the last thing you want is to be taken out of that moment with interference. So that makes it doubly frustrating, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Like, two quick things I was going to bring up. The first was going back to Lashley, because I was with Brad when he was bringing up that Lashley just not being a wrestler now does feel strange. I'm with him on that. I don't know where they're going with that. But as far as the match with the Street Profits and Escobar and Rey, I mean, it was a good match. The wrestling on the show was really good tonight, by the way. I really enjoyed all of it, honestly. With the Street Profit part, when Dawkins, you know, hesitated, do you think – I still feel like they're going heel. I still feel like Lashley getting in their face mm-hmm. was more of, I want them – like, they're going to have a mean streak now. He's going to be so ticked off. He's just like, I'm just going to go attack somebody. I'm just so ticked off. I don't care who it is type thing. Is that what you guys were thinking with that? Because I still think Street Profits would be better turning heel. I think that would be a different thing for their character, and I would really like it a lot more at this point in time.
Yeah, I like what they're doing if they're doing what I think they're doing, which is, okay, you're cheering them because they dress well, they're cool, you like the Street Profits, you often like Bobby Lashley despite how they're
yeah.
framing him, or regardless, I guess I should say, of how they're framing him on TV. And so, hey, we like these guys. And so now they're telling a story. They're taking us on a ride with the Street Profits, which is, ooh, Lashley wants, and the announcers are doing a good job. They've got all their talking points. They have a new attitude, and Cole's like, yes, but you need to win because that's how you make money, and that's how you gain respect, is winning. So attitude or not, it's got to have results. And you have Street Profits fighting it a bit. They're not sure they want to go down this road, which makes sense because we've seen Ford and Dawkins
right.
for years, and it doesn't make sense. They would just suddenly – you know, oh, we're mad and mean and cheat and happy about it. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't ring true. So they're now deciding to take us on a journey so that we can root for the Profits as viewers to not cheat, not take shortcuts, not show a bad attitude. I think a lot of fans will feel that way. And yet, ultimately, I think they will choose to do it Lashley's way in the way they tell the story. And I'm not saying it'll work. But their goal is to get the fans to resent the Profits for going along with Lashley. But one of the keys is establish Lashley as a villainous figure first, trying to turn the Street Profits to a dark side. So he's established, in contrast to the current Profits even, as a heel. And then when the Profits do ultimately align with him and go along with his game plan of shortcuts and interfere, you know, cheating and that kind of thing, then they will be a heel. So I think, it seems like they've acknowledged, and now they're trying to address in a strategic way, taking fans on a journey where ultimately they will boo that threesome. I think unless Lashley's got some injury that I haven't heard of or recall, I think he'll end up wrestling. But right now, yeah, he's just trying to bring a tag team into the fold to coach and guide. But I assume there will be either some 3-on-3 matches or he'll end up in the singles ranks. Greg, your thoughts on all that? I definitely wanted to get your take on what's going on with the Profits and Lashley.
Yeah, I see it the same way you do, Wade, and it was kind of strange for a lot of fans when they first hooked up as a threesome, because you had Bobby Lashley, who was, if he was not already established as a heel, was definitely giving off heel vibes. He was doing interviews in the ring with the Street Profits, and he definitely came off as heelish. And yet the Street Profits were there as baby faces and hadn't turned heel yet. So I think there was a lot of confusion about, okay, well, are the Street Profits heels or is Bobby Lashley a baby face? So I'm glad that they're taking the time to, as you said, take us on this journey and get us to that point where WWE is acknowledging, yeah, we know one's a heel and two are baby faces, and who's going to win out? Like when they butt heads because of that, as they did here tonight on SmackDown, is the temptation to be with Bobby Lashley as heels going to win out, or is the fans' adulation and just their history as a babyface going to win out for the Street Profits? So they're telling us that story of, okay, here are these babyfaces who are with this heel, but now things have come to a head, and they've got to make a decision how much further down this heel road they want to go with Lashley.
All right, Sean, back to you.
Yeah, I like what they're doing. I like to, again, WWE is telling pretty good stories right now. Again, that's what makes them better in a lot of ways. They tell better stories. You know, the wrestling, you know, it's still very good, but they tell good, you know, make you kind of get compelled, get you intrigued on where they're going to go next. But the last question I was going to ask you, just some thought of where Grayson and Theory are going, because I feel like they're on a good path with Theory. Like, you know, they got him with Waller, you know, two good charismatic guys that are guys you just want to see get their ass kicked, and they're just, they're good in their roles. And I think they're both doing a really good job right now. So that's kind of what I wanted to hear. What you think they might be going with them, like, you know, maybe the next 6 to 12 months, kind of what you think of them so far and where Grayson could be going. Because Grayson, to me, is still the bigger star, even though Theory still can do some really good things. I mean, he's on a good track. I mean, I've liked what he's done. I mean, even though I didn't love the title reign, but he's a good character, and I think they can do some really good things with him. So I want to hear what you guys thought about that. And Greg, again, I appreciate your out loud, because I never got a chance to really read a lot of your columns. So I love that you've gone on to the podcast world, you know, with that, because I get to actually listen to them and get to enjoy them. So I appreciate what both of you guys
awesome.
Do for the Torch, and I appreciate you guys taking my call.
Excellent. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it. Go ahead, Greg.
I wonder with Grayson Waller and Austin Theory if there's only room for one character like that to really shine, especially on the same brand, right? I think you could imagine Grayson Waller on Raw, Austin Theory on SmackDown, and being able to survive in their own little world on their own with that character. But having both of them on the same show with, you know, basically the same character, I do wonder if, and maybe this WWE is not consciously doing this, but it's a bit of a competition. You're putting them both on the screen at the same time. You're putting them in a tag team. Who's going to come out as the bigger star? Who's going to come out as the bigger heel? Who's going to come out as the better choice to go forward with as a potential main event heel? You know, Austin Theory has the advantage of being on a bigger stage for longer than Grayson Waller has, but I think in a lot of ways, character-wise, Grayson Waller has caught up to or even passed Austin Theory. So it is, every time they're on TV, I view it as some sort of a little bit of a competition of, you know, 2-3 years, both of these guys may not be here together, or, you know, there may be a drastic character change for one of them, because I wonder if both of these characters, as similar as they are, can survive together on the same brand, unless you just put them in a tag team full time, which I'm not really sure that's WWE's intent.
Yeah, I'm enjoying them playing off each other, although they sort of are next to each other, but doing their own thing for the most part. But I think eventually they will, and I don't think they even know where they're going to land with this, but I think ultimately the goal is going to be have them play off each other in some way, you know, that it will manifest in some way. And it wouldn't shock me if it's Grayson Waller turning babyface. A lot of characters like his, you know, turn their obnoxiousness into something sort of endearing that comes at the expense of heels. So that could happen. They could also just get separated in a draft, you know, they can be together and then just be separated in the next draft or something like that. But there is a certain aspect that jumps out as redundant, you know, that these are two very similar personalities, but just different enough to not feel like they would necessarily tolerate each other or want to be around each other, because they sort of compete for the same type of, you know, they're both attention whores and obnoxious. So it's a curious pairing to me. it's not bothering me. I think that they're both entertaining in their own way. And I think it can grow into something where eventually it strikes somebody, either one or the other of them, or people observing behind the scenes. Ah, here's something we can do that I think will be an interesting next kind of chapter in the dynamic between you guys. You know, with RK-Bro, you know, they're very different personalities. These two are very similar, so it's a different kind of challenge to get them to seem like they have chemistry, as opposed to these two people are after the same thing in life. Why would they coexist so well together? So, we'll see. But you know, Sean's, you know, makes some good points when talking about them. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's shift to Brian from Phoenix, Arizona. He attended tonight, and we have questions for him, and we're going to hear from him. Brian, welcome. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Greg. Hopefully you're both having a really good night. Thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it.
Of course. And thank you for all your support over the years. So, Brian, one thing I'll just start with. Was there after SmackDown a match that John Cena wrestled for the fans, or did they leave getting teased with a Cena match but not get one?
Excellent question to start off with, Wade. And, of course, like you said, I'm a 32-year senior PW Torch VIP subscriber. It's always great to talk to you and Greg. So it was a dark match. As soon as they left, soon as Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso left Cena in the ring, they walked away, and then music started, and it was the Street Profits. And it was actually Montez Ford challenged Cena for a match. Cena was still laying there, rang the bell. Montez got a lot of offense in. Cena just kept kicking out, and then Cena eventually, of course, won. On the match. So it may be about 4 to 5-ish minutes. I'm sorry, and then clock it or anything like that. But, you know, Cena ultimately looked good, even though he did sell the B down really well throughout the entire Ford match that he had. Angelo Dawkins, he did interfere, and the ref kicked Angelo out. And so that was a distraction where it gave Cena a chance to kind of get a little bit better. And then, of course, he did his five moves of doom and got the pin.
Interesting. Greg, do you recall, or Brian, do you recall a Cena-Montez one-on-one match before?
No.
Yeah,
I
my thinking is this would be, yeah, so my thinking is this is sort of like, let's give Montez this match. We don't know if it'll ever happen again, that there'll be an opportunity. And, you know, it could just be sort of a bucket list item for Montez and kind of fun. I'm looking up Cena versus Montez online, and all I'm getting are video game matches. So that's interesting, yeah. And so did the fans seem, I assume they seemed fine with that?
Yeah, overall they were. The area I sat in had a lot of kids in it. We'll talk about the audience here later on. But they were pretty happy to see it. And, you know, Cena looked really good, and he, you know, slapped some hands on the way out, and he did a couple, you know, parades at the end, and everybody didn't leave happy because there was a match after that. But, he, you know, ultimately he looked good. The thing, you know, you mentioned, Wade, you know, was just like a bucket list match for Montez Ford. Kind of hard to say because, you know, he didn't do anything like Montez Ford-ish, you know, nothing really spectacular. It was mostly like this punches and kicks, you know, just trying to really beat down Cena, so no spectacular moves. So, you know, wrestling is wrestling, so maybe that, you know, I could agree with that just being like, you know, a match you didn't want to do sometimes, or wanted to do.
Greg, do you want to ask a question of Brian about the show?
Sure. You know, we're in this era where it's so hard to, when you're watching at home, really get a good sense of the crowd reaction because WWE does so much crowd sweetening and adjusting of the crowd noise and things like that. So I was interested to see what the crowd reaction to Asuka versus Io Sky was. Were they with the match the entire time? They're both kind of heels. The crowd seemed to favor one over the other in any significant way?
Greg, it's a really good question. And after I answer this, I'm going to turn around and ask you and Wade about Paul Heyman being in the ring and see how that sound went. But going back to Io versus Asuka, it started off pretty, the audience was pretty tame, and they started to get into it more, and it was more Io chance than Asuka chance, and I'm a huge Asuka fan, so I was I was playing. I'm still playing a good fan now,
mm-hmm.
But I was still saying more Asuka. You know, let's go Asuka, and they were saying let's go Io. But as the match kept going on, I'm not sure if you ever heard of This Is Awesome. I don't think it ever picked up really well enough to maybe get heard on television. But there was at least one time, maybe twice, where there was a This Is Awesome chant. So ultimately, the audience actually did, you know, enjoy the match, but it did start off pretty slow for the audience picking it up.
Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, was the crowd disappointed at all when they did the kind of bait and switch there? They sort of set up the Usos versus Jimmy and Solo versus John Cena and AJ Styles, and they said, no, we're going to have that for Fastlane, Paul Heyman did in the backstage segment, or Adam Pearce did. And then you had a contract signing at the end that was plugged, and you didn't even really get a contract signing. You got the beat down, and maybe that was even better than the contract signing, because contract signings are pretty bland. And so maybe the beat down of AJ Styles backstage and the beat down of John Cena in the ring was more dramatic and more interesting to the fans. But was there any sense that you got, or maybe you personally, let down by the idea that they teased two pretty big segments and kind of only half followed through with one of them?
I have, Greg, a more differing opinion than probably you, and I know definitely than Wade and I do about, you know, a bait and switch or that terminology. With the tag team match, I didn't understand that it was going to go into Fastlane until they put a graphic up. So I assumed that I assumed that the match actually was going to happen tonight until a graphic came up. So I didn't hear Pierce and Paul Heyman talking about it. So, and I don't know if there's a disappointment, to be honest about it, Greg. And then if you go to the contract signing, because like you said, you know, was, you know, when Cena came out and it was like a pause there, and then I'm, you know, talking to the people around me, it's like, what's going on with AJ? And, you know, they hit his music and he still didn't come out, like something happened, and they went, you know, went right to the, what was going on in the back. So I don't think the audience had enough time to like say, oh my God, we're missing a contract signing because of the physicality of both AJ and then of Cena as well.
Okay. Interesting.
Brian, you've seen John Cena in person a lot. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Wait, there is a small lag. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Brian, you've seen John Cena in person a lot over the years. How does this reaction compare, and is it different? Is it unexpected? Talk about, because we were talking about earlier how it's just amazing that crowds not that many years ago would be chanting, you know, dueling chant, you know, let's go Cena, Cena sucks. Was there any of that, or it just came across as 100% positive for John?
So a couple of weeks ago, I was on Wrestling Night in America, and I think it was after which pay-per-view, Greg, did I call it? The last pay-per-view that Cena was on, where he did the referee.
Yeah.
So I called Greg that night, and I mentioned that to Greg about how shocking, in a way, where you don't hear, you know, Cena sucks, and then when Cena songs hit and people singing that, it's kind of, to me, it's kind of shocking when you don't hear it anymore. But the audience here, there was not a peep of anything negative about Cena at all. And my experience of seeing Cena over the years, you know, it's an act that hasn't really changed a lot. And I enjoy what he does and what he has done and continues to do. So overall, I thought he was, you know, there was no negativity at all from where I was sitting at.
Very good. How about the Street Profits and Lashley and the crowd reaction to the Street Profits? Did it seem like they're rooting for them even against babyfaces, or already rooting against them? And what did you make of the angle at the end where Lashley walked out on them? Was it obvious to the crowd what was going on?
So the crowd was... Well, they cheered both the Brawling Brutes and then the Street Profits, and they were, you know, it's been interesting, Wade, because I've been noticing about how nice a pop that Bobby Lashley seemed to be getting. You know, and again, like you mentioned, I was listening in, you talking to probably Sean. Hey, Sean, by the way, from Murphy's Raw. It seemed like the crowd was muted, but they were still, you know, pretty happy to see Street Profits. And I didn't sense anything them necessarily turning against either Bobby Lashley or the Street Profits. So when Bobby Lashley walked out, I was kind of like, oh, what's going on? And I was talking to people around me. And then they showed the backstage segment. They showed the backstage segment where Lashley again walked out on him. So the crowd seemed to be okay with Street Profits until they came out during the dark match with Montez Ford going against Cena. So after that, they was, you know, Montez was totally booed at that point.
Did Io Sky and Asuka hold the crowd's attention? Were they really into them? And who did they naturally side with as the match was going on and the story that they told in the match?
It started off pretty slow. The crowd didn't have a whole lot to say as the match was going on. The crowd kept picked up a lot and started bonding more with the match and with the wrestlers. Io was over more than Asuka was. And they did cheer when the interference, I can't necessarily call it interference, but when Charlotte came and punched Bayley, and Asuka was just standing there looking at everybody, was kind of, you know, whoa, what's going on? And then that's when, you know, Io got the pin after her moonsault. So it was, you know, and I would say that that we applauded the match at the end, but it was Io was more over than Asuka was. But they both got a lot of cheers.
Who got the most heel heat of the night? Grayson Waller, Heyman, on and on, you know, among the options. Who got the most boost?
Well, okay, I'm glad you mentioned that, Wade, because that's one of the questions I have for you and Greg, is that it was, you know, for the entirety of it would have been Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. But when Paul Heyman came out, it was nothing but booze as he walked to the ring, slowly walked to the ring, got into, and, you know, ladies and gentlemen, and everybody started booing, and then that's when, you know, Heyman said, you know, you're going to boo women here, and, you know, I'm going to boo women here. But it seemed like it was, you know, I just kept constantly booing him all the time, and it seemed like that's all it went was just booing, booing, booing for any time Paul was saying, or entirely of everything Paul said. I just wanted to see how it came across to you and Greg on television, because, you know, I'm not sure if it was piped in, but it was Heyman got huge heat.
Yeah, it came across on TV. Greg, how about for you?
Yeah, definitely. I thought that was one of the biggest key moments of the night. And just I just have one more question for Brian is, you know, we were talking earlier about Austin Theory and Grayson Waller both kind of occupying the same slot on SmackDown. So I was curious as to who got the most heel heat of the duo. Was it, were fans more into booing Grayson Waller, or was it Austin Theory?
Great question, Greg. To me, it seemed like it was more booing of Austin Theory, but they were pretty close to being neck and neck. But I would say it was Austin Theory more because he's known more. But I was listening to you and Wade earlier, and about it seems like Grayson Waller, maybe because of his talk show, that he seems to have eclipsed Austin Theory as far as maybe the vocabulary skills are concerned. I would say Austin Theory had a little more heel heat than Grayson did. And I can see those two being like, I'm a wrestling fan where like heels are friends. Like there was I'll tell you this really quick. And I know, I'll tell you this part really quick. When Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn both were heels at this time, they were traded over to Raw. And that was when The Miz had The Miz was with Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. And so Miz was so happy that they were joining Raw, that the five of them were in the ring hugging and laughing and having a great time. And to me, it's kind of funny when heels are friends. To me, it's fun. And, you know, when they're not necessarily a tag team, too. So when I see Grayson Waller and Theory kind of hanging out, and then I need someone talking about Pretty Deadly here too. But I like when they hang out like that. To me, it's fun, you know, to see heels hang out like that. The Pretty Deadly part, I was kind of hyping my area up about them when they showed them on, I showed their skin on TV, you know, about how much I miss them and how great they look. You know, the people in my area were laughing at me, or laughing with me, or laughing at me, or both, when I was talking about Pretty Deadly. So it's good to see them again. Thanks, Greg. Anything else you two gentlemen have?
I just say, do you have anything else to share with us about the experience being in the crowd watching a TV show? Did it feel like there was a good flow to the show? Did the fans ever get disengaged, or did the WWE do things during commercial breaks to get them re-engaged? And just any other kind of off-air observations from attendees?
Thanks, Wade. I was going to mention that. So this is the Desert Diamond Arena where it's at. Now, this is in Glendale, Arizona, and Glendale is like the arena is probably maybe 10 minutes from my house. It really takes me longer to park than actually drive here, to believe it or not, because parking here is incredible. It's pretty bad. So this is on the west side of Phoenix, and so the car started at 4:45 is what the announced time was. So I mentioned this before, Wei, when how the traffic of Phoenix is. So people had to leave work or get out of school earlier, however they decide to get over to this side of town. And I would say a lot part of Phoenix lives on the east side of town, where, again, this is on the west side of town where I live at and where the arena is. So people had to cut across town to get to the arena, and then plus you have normal after-work traffic leaving to come home. So it was been a lot of traffic to get out here. And that happened the same thing during football games, because right across the street from here is State Farm Stadium where the Arizona Cardinals play. So when they have like a Thursday night football here, it's pretty bad to get out here, you know, because of normal traffic and then plus football traffic. So the reason why I bring all this part up, Wade, is that it takes a while for the arena to fill up because of the time and everything. So it's, you know, when Cena came out, he said it was a sellout. I would say it's probably 99% because the seat next to me was not occupied at all. So maybe, you know, maybe somebody bought and decided not to come. So maybe it was like a 99% sellout. But it looked to me, I'm not a good judge as far as like counting people, and I said this over the years, Wade. But, you know, as I looked around, and I was up in the 200 level, as I looked around and looked down, you know, there was kind of, you know, small pockets of seats, but nothing like a major gap of seats that were sold out. I was sitting on the hard camera side, so, you know, as everybody was talking, they were looking directly at me, so to speak. The area around the hard camera, they had seats in front of it, side of it, behind it, were sold, and, you know, had enough seats to, like, do the hard camera. So it wasn't like the entire side was tarped off on the lower level part. I didn't see a lot of any other type of T-shirts. I did see one or two Bullet Club shirts, but other than that, everything was all WWE, you know, variety of things. There was Hulk Hogan cosplay guy. Actually, he was on the TV side. You might have saw him in the audience because he was
on the
TV side. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talked to him for like a hot minute. And then there was another guy who was dressed up as Randy Savage. I talked to him for about a minute as well, too. And let me see, anything else? Merchandise. I took a couple pictures. I didn't post them on, I'll call it Twitter, because if you type twitter.com, that's what pops up. If you type x.com, I'm not sure if it pops up. I don't want to know. But I'll post when we're done here, Greg and Wade, some pictures of the merch tables. But it seemed like it was just mostly, because it's SmackDown card, mostly SmackDown t-shirts and other things like that. And, I'm sorry, the last dark match was Becky Lynch defended, I think she defended, her NXT Women's Championship against Zoe Stark. Nice back and forth. Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, Becky was on Raw, and I can't remember where Raw was, but she was on NXT, of course, in Florida, and then she came out to here to Phoenix to do the dark match. And she got a lot of, you know, she got a lot of cheers. Zoe got a lot of boos, but... Again, the crowd was kind of muted, but a lot of people didn't leave, Wade. You know, it was like a huge exodus when after Cena was laying flat. But when Cena was laying flat, Street Profits came out right away, so it wasn't a whole lot of time for people like to, you know, to say, hey, there's nothing going to happen, let's go. But the ring announcer, he did announce, like, right before the end that there would be a dark match with Becky versus Zoe. So we knew the match was going to happen, so it wasn't a surprise. But a lot of people, I would say 75 to 80% stayed around to watch. Becky versus Zoe. And that is about it. And it's great to talk to both of you, as always.
Brian, thank you so much. Great report. Always good talking with you.
Wade, always good talking to you. A huge supporter of yourself. Obviously, if I've been here for 32 years, I'm a huge supporter of yourself. Greg, you and I talk a lot, or talk enough, Greg. And like Sean said, I really like Out Loud. When you talk about WWE stuff, I don't miss anything else. The WWE stuff, Greg. Great job that you always do. And I really appreciate it. And thanks a lot for always having me on, guys. It's just great being a PW Torch subscriber.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian, thank you so much. Drive safe, and we'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right. The sounds of the arena in the background.
It sounded like he was getting in his motorcycle and driving away as he was
saying goodbye. At the very end, it did. Yes, yes. I'm trying to think if I've got much more to ask. I mean, I think we've covered so much territory. We should address the Kit Wilson Elton Prince video a little bit more, for sure. I enjoyed the heck out of that. I love the cameo from the doctor going, he's got a separated shoulder. He'll be fine. the angle of Elton in the bed kind of reminded me of Vince McMahon in the hospital bed where McFoley showed up. They should be glad that they had the injury setback, but I think they're turning this into as much of a positive as you can, because we're learning about the different personalities of Kit Wilson and Elton Prince, and Kit's sort of in this context coming across as the leader and the grown up, and Elton Prince as the high maintenance, overly dramatic partner. And so this accomplished more than let's just be funny, but I think it also was funny in a way that fits their characters. What do you think watching it? What do you think?
These guys have it. Whatever it is, they've got it. Yeah. And you kind of saw glimpses of that in NXT, but you never know when you see somebody in NXT and you feel like they have it, how that's going to translate on the main roster, both in terms of being plopped into a completely different universe of wrestlers and a completely different storytelling universe. You have a completely different set of writers who are now writing for you. Are they going to get what you do? Are they going to get who you are? Are the fans, which is a very different set of fans, are they going to accept your act? So there's a lot of bumps in the road that can take place when you move from NXT to the main roster. But I'm glad that their act has translated almost 100%, if not more. Like, I think they may be even more polished in certain ways. And, you know, it's still early, but they may be even more polished as an act in certain ways on the main roster than they were in NXT. So they are very entertaining. They are very good in the ring, and I'm really excited. I think they add a different dimension to SmackDown and to the tag team division.
Yeah. Greg, anything else you want to add from tonight's show?
No, I think those are the big points. I think we hit on all the good stuff.
Yeah, well, very good. We'll wrap up there. Thanks to our callers and on-site correspondent. Greg, thanks. What have you got coming up Sunday night? What's on the agenda?
Yeah, we've got it's good that I'm here to talk about it and to plug it, because we've got a first-time co-host with me on Wrestling Night in America this Sunday, David Bryant, who does the AEW Collision Hits and Misses.
Hits and Misses, yes.
For PWTorch.com. He's going to debut on not only on Wrestling Night in America, but this is his debut on a PW Torch audio show. So he's going to join me on Sunday, Wrestling Night in America, 8 p.m. Eastern, pwtorchdailycast.com, to break down the Grand Slam episode of Dynamite on Wednesday, as well as the follow-up on Rampage tonight as we speak, or I guess it's overnight now, but Rampage Grand Slam as well. So, I'm really looking forward to talking with him, to getting a new voice on there, and people call in and email if you've got any thoughts on Grand Slam or any questions that you want us to discuss. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your email, and if you want to call up and talk to us on Sunday night, 515-605-9345.
That's fantastic. I'm looking forward to hearing you and David talk AEW. His columns are destination reading, I hope, for so many people out there. He covered AEW Dark, and his analysis is so sharp, and he sees things through a different lens, or notices things, maybe is a better way to put it, that I don't notice and focuses on different things and makes me look at things differently. And that's a sign of a really good writer and a good wrestling mind. So check that out, everybody. Search PW Torch on your podcast app to subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Greg, thank you. We will talk to you again soon. And VIP members, hope you're checking out Greg Parks Out Loud, where he reads his columns and adds some context and other notes to that also. Greg, have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too, Wade.